Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, everybody. How are you, Paul?
I'm good. Sounds like you're having a bad day here, though, today. Tire blew out or something?
No, not blowout.
God. I'm trying to build it up.
Oh, you're going
to
build it up? Yes, yeah. The tire blew out.
Tire swerved.
Took out half the 73 freeway over the hill.
Flipped three times.
No, you know, it's been just kind of like a rush kind of morning, and started off at about 5:30, and ended up, see, we just almost dropped over a bottle of water, too. I finally, I'm going to get a cup of coffee. I call one of our guests, Kevin, you know, we're just, you know, thank you for sending the questions. We're kind of getting a little bit of, you know, advance prep for the show a little bit. And yeah. I go in and get a cup of coffee, walk out of Starbucks, and I got a nail in my tire, which I probably picked up at the job site this morning. So,
jeez.
Yeah. So,
And you just here. And what did we talk about last week, Ron? We talked about massage. We talked about slow down.
Seriously,
we talked about
what did
relax.
I do to you? What I wanted to find out is what happened to you after that massage on Wednesday when you had a 3-day weekend. Is what I wanted to know.
Oh, it was heaven.
What did you feel let down? That you know that it just was over, and you had a 3-day weekend, and you weren't getting any massages.
No, I have a 2-year-old grandson that I watched all weekend while his parents went out and partied in the desert here. So no, I needed every bit of relaxation I could. He just goes. He's like the Energizer Bunny. When he wakes up, he goes.
Yeah, you guys. I don't know if you heard. Do you listen in last week or not? But Paul made the mistake a couple of weeks ago of actually divulging. I can't remember if it was on the air or in private, but it doesn't really matter with me.
No,
he divulged that he had
not had
a massage ever.
Yeah. Do real guys get massages?
And gave me this whole rigmarole about the Midwest guys don't get massages and people don't hugs. And I felt bad for your grandson at that point. But, you know, he's going to cure you out of that. I know he'll cure you out of that. But so we said, okay, fine. And I'm an ambassador for global wellness, and actually I brought a couple of paddles because I think financial wellness is equally important, right? So we're going to get you guys signed up for global wellness before I let you out of the room. Did you lock the door?
You brought some paddles. Are you going to whip them or something?
I brought some paddles. They're wellness paddles.
Oh, okay. All right.
We really get the wellness
go
out of you.
Back to Catholic school here again or something. Get paddled.
This is not that kind of therapy for you today.
No. I've never had that done either, so if you want to bring in a dominatrix or something.
No. Okay. Paul, we've been doing this show for a year, and there are many that perceive that this show is not really my show. It's really Paul's therapy session.
Fantasy, yeah.
Right. No, well, last week it became fantasy. So anyway, so he said, I have never had a massage. So I said, okay. So we're in preparation for June 11th, Global Wellness Day, which has only been around since 2012. This lady had some medical issues in Turkey. Her family owns a resort and property is involved sort of in the spa industry, so she decided she was going to reprogram her life, and then looked around and realized that there was nothing that actually celebrated wellness. So she set up this nonprofit called Global Wellness Day, which is one day can basically could change your life is the sort of the underlying premise. And it's raising awareness about the fact that you need to have a balance in your life and you have, you know, wellness and what you eat, what you put in your system, so forth. So today is actually day 3 of the challenge leading up to Global Wellness Day, where we say do not use any plastic bottles. So with that being said, we've got plastic bottles on the
table. Yeah, I didn't know that. Sorry.
anyway, so Paul says, I've never been touched like that.
I didn't say it like that, but I'm not used to having a male or female massage me. It's just, that's a little uncomfortable.
So let's just say that he got massaged on the air last week, while he sat in his chair. It was all above board. But in order to just kind of sweeten the pot and kind of loosen him up, we had spa girl cocktails in the house, too. And so he was sipping on vodka with infused cucumber or pear.
I was loose.
And getting massaged.
Wow.
And then I released him into the wild after that. So I was wondering what happened, you know, around you over the weekend. So you had a good weekend.
Had a good weekend.
Okay, yeah. Good.
I was energized. I was ready to play with little Jack here. So
yeah. So now our guests are going, what the heck is this show this week? Why don't we have massages and cocktails going on today?
Right.
We're
going
to massage our wallets. We're going to massage but the other part of our.
We are, because you know what, we got to pay for all those sort of treating ourselves in certain ways. And as we get older, and let me just introduce the gentleman in the show with us today. And thank you for both for coming. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Kevin Richards and Steve Herman are both from, and you know what? I'm just going to have you actually introduce it, Kevin, because I think it's an interesting approach how you positioned your company when you founded it. So why don't you just tell people who you are
and what you do?
Give a little bit of background on your company and why you positioned it the way you did, because I think it's interesting the way you positioned it.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks, guys, first of all, for having us here, Rod and Paul. We've been doing this industry of financial planning for about 10 years. Our firm is K&R Consulting Group, and we're pleased to have that rating of A+ from the Better Business Bureau.
You guys are here, right here in Orange County.
That's right. We have an office in Laguna Niguel and also Garden Grove. So we really love what we do, honestly. It's something that it gets us up in the morning. It's not just a job. It's an actual crusade in our eyes, but we tend to focus mostly with helping veterans and those that are starting to look at their choices in Social Security. Mm-hmm. Those that are, I call them baby boomers, which you all know is the largest demographic out there. So we really have gotten ourselves well educated and knowledgeable in all the options that folks who are veterans and also who are looking at, you know, choosing Social Security soon, so they get the most out of it. We want to get the most out of Social Security. We want to get the most out of your veterans' benefits for those who get service.
I got lots of questions today. Lots of questions. Right.
Good.
Most of the shows on the station, I get to just sit here and be the engineer. But Rod made the mistake.
Lucky me. I said, "What do you think, Paul?"
Yeah, at once. And now I get to pipe in and do the stuff. I am shocked at how unprepared. We were talking about this before you came, Rod. How unprepared. It's the common theme of the show. How unprepared baby boomers, my generation, is for what's coming next. Lucky us, we're going to live to be 90. How much money am I supposed to have? The average baby boomer has, what, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 saved for 30 years? Less than 10 or 20% of them are going to get retirement plans. And so, and healthcare, who knows what that's going to cost.
Well, what made you focus on this particular area, Kevin?
Because he's smart. He sees it coming.
Well, obviously, right. You know, it's a growth business. But And by the way, it turns out that millennials have actually just now exceeded boomers.
Interesting. I didn't know that fact. Huh.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
I'm 44.
Gen X, or what are you?
Yeah.
An Xer, basically?
Xer. You call it Xers, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what do you call
special
it?
People.
Special people.
Special people.
Yeah, there was a lot of them around here today.
What we call Rod. Rod is not a baby boomer. I'm the only baby boomer in the, I'm officially smack dab in it. And
he's our target audience, actually. The only reason why I keep him in the
room.
That's it.
And Rod is a wannabe. He just wants to. He wishes he were older. He wants to be a baby boomer.
I'm 51. I just turned 51.
You want to be older. That's great.
Well, I don't want to be older. It's really funny that I'm doing this show because it actually happened just as I turned 50.
Yeah.
So at the same time that I got an AARP thing in the mail is the same time that Paul goes, hey, we want to do a boomer show. What do you think? You think we want to do this? But it actually turns out that millennials are just now about exceeding, which we've always talked about, that whatever we're doing today relevant to boomers. And mm-hmm. we being sort of a bridge generation, if you will, right?
Right.
That information and all the ground that we are covering and all the innovation and development that's happening today is not just limited to this particular generation. It is actually going to be translatable directly all the way through, because Xers are going to need this information.
Oh, yeah.
Millennials are going to need this information. You know, so again, a sense of empowerment. The sooner you educate yourself, which I think is it's a big thing for you guys, you know, the educating aspect of it, or the educational aspect of it. The sooner you educate yourself, the more empowered that you have in making these decisions.
Right.
Rather than leave them to the last minute, and then basically you're limited in what it is that you can do.
And we're going to pioneer this. Baby boomers are going to pioneer this. We're going to live longer than any generation ever has. So we're going to be the first wave to hit the shore, and whatever we figure out, the next generations are going to have to learn from that and improve upon it.
What do you think about that? Do you think the fact that this particular demographic and the characteristics of this particular demographic, the boomers, if you will, those specific characteristics. Do you think it's going to make a major? It's going to change the way we actually address some of these issues and concerns that we have been around forever. You know, like retirement's been around forever. Being sure that you got yourself covered. Obviously, the time frame of how many years you have, maybe after retirement, until you know you pass away or some or something, are getting longer, mm-hmm. and you're healthier. Right, and the financial constraints and pressures aren't getting any less.
Yeah.
So, do you think those sorts are almost like the perfect formation of perfect storm
yeah.
to the way we deal with these things or have dealt with these things in the past is going
to
change?
I do, and it's a great point to bring up. We call it the silver tsunami, to be honest, because what we're starting to see is many folks in Paul's demographic has 45% of them have no retirement savings whatsoever, zero. They're living fully off of Social Security if they're lucky, or they're having to work way past the age they hoped they would retire. I mean, many of them are working in their 70s.
Tell me about it.
Right? So you're really having to start. It's highlighting the fact that everybody from age 25 to 65 should take the time to plan out their life. Mm-hmm. And I mean financially plan out their life. I mean take care of the catastrophic events like long-term care sicknesses that can really devastate a person's retirement savings and bankrupt their spouse.
Right.
So it's starting to really bring to the light the fact that we all should have been doing this for years. But, you know, my view is there's never a too late of a point to start planning, whether you're 60 or 50 or 40. You need to start sitting down, look at your facts, look at your budget, look at your expenses, your income. Put down a written plan, not just the theorized or imagined plan of make more money and spend less.
Yeah.
That's not a plan.
Right.
You need to have an exact way to increase your income from Social Security if you have not yet selected it, from your 401ks, your IRAs, mm-hmm. in a very detailed way. In other words, how much do you take out of those accounts so you don't outlive your money.
Right.
And that's a concern Paul brought up a few minutes ago.
Big fear.
Huge fear. And it's the thing that Steve and I run into daily, that's the number one concern I'm running into for those that are in their early 60s.
Right.
That they are really concerned greatly to run out of their life savings and have to move in with their kids or be in destitute conditions.
So it's
fine being nice to my grandson here.
Right.
Well, it sounds like give him a lot of hugs.
Yeah.
It sounds like this is something that maybe is more manifesting itself in the boomer generation.
Yeah.
As far as an awareness, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And what about let's just kind of like set the benchmark here, okay? Because I think a lot of people that are afraid of outliving their finances, or that maybe have not taken the time to prepare, okay, or mm-hmm. to do the planning, right? May think that they're alone. They think that they're the only one out there that hasn't done that, because God knows we get bombarded by all kinds of financial institutions and by all kinds of, you know, retirement vehicles and all kinds of advertising all the time. And so for that person that is out there that feels like maybe they are alone in having not prepared, mm-hmm. okay, what do you say to that person? Is that, in fact, a reality? Or is the majority of people out there basically finding themselves in some sort of lack of preparedness?
It's by far a majority, and it's sad to see it. But even in Orange County, we're running this as wealthy as a county we are. I guess Steve, probably 60% of the folks that we do seminars with out there, we do them a lot in community centers and libraries on Social Security. A majority of the audience does not have enough money to live the lifestyle they want to live for the rest of their life.
Let's have Steve say hello. We keep referencing him here.
No, I mean, it's absolutely correct. I mean, 59% of boomers expect Social Security to be a major source of their income, and that is not going to be enough. As Kevin was mentioning, in Orange County especially, you won't be able to survive with that.
Right, no,
especially
in a place like this. So, and these people that are coming to your seminars or to your meetings that you guys put together, educational meetings, it's across a whole range of age brackets, right? It's not just a particular focus, or are you guys focusing specifically on a certain group?
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, I would say like the majority, I would say anywhere between 55, and you still may have some option after the age of 65 as well. So, I mean, I would say probably 55 to 70 even.
Yeah, most people don't think about it until they have to, and then like me. I'll give you a perfect example. Okay, my wife is, I've said this on the show, so I don't get in trouble here. She just turned 65 this year. She'll actually be 66 this coming fall. And she's still working. She works for a bank. She used to be a branch manager, and now she does something in auditing. And she's really debating, and some of her friends and others have said, oh, why don't you just quit, take Social Security? And then we looked into it. It's like, I think we should wait until we really have to take Social Security, because it goes up dramatically the longer you delay it. And I'm shocked that people are, as soon as they can get it, at 62 or whatever, are taking this, locking themselves into a lifetime of a low rate.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, a lot of the times the reason why a lot of individuals start their Social Security benefit at age 62 is because they're misinformed.
Yeah.
And also, as far as when you should start collecting your Social Security benefit, it's going to be a very complex decision, and it should definitely be some personalized planning for that. Because obviously, we all have different types of.
So let's go through some of the numbers. If you take it at 62, what per, or as opposed to waiting till 70, which is the final year it goes up, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Between that 62 and 70, what kind of difference are we talking about? How much more do you get at 70 if you wait?
Well, I mean, from the from your full retirement age, which can be nowadays like 66 and a couple of months and so, your Social Security benefit will increase by 8% each year till age 70, which is the max that you can start collecting that. So depending on what you're looking to do as far as wanting to retire or changing your lifestyle that you may have, depending on what you want to do, it's probably the reason why you should start collecting your Social Security benefit. But one thing you need to keep in mind is, anything you do before your full retirement age with Social Security, you're either penalized or you will receive a reduced amount.
Forever.
That is correct.
And that's what we didn't quite understand. Let's say she retired today. Okay, it, as opposed to waiting till 70, you're saying it goes up 8%, so that's 8 times 4. That's what, another 30% that payment will increase if she waits to start taking it at 70. Okay. So you say, well, in the old days, you 70, you know, geez, how many years have I got left? 2, 3, 4 years? What the heck? Take it. If I had a crystal ball, that's what I always tell her.
10, 15, 20 is more like it.
Yeah. So suddenly, if I start taking it accidentally or just, what the heck, start taking it at 64, 65, 66, all of a sudden I've locked myself into a third less for 30 years, for 20 years.
That's correct.
Wow, and I can't go back and change that later and say, oops, I made a mistake here. I didn't know I was going to live this long.
You have some very limited options. I mean, depending on the strategy, such as spousal benefits and ex-spousal benefits, to where I've seen in the past that you could make some changes and have a higher amount, even if you started collecting at an earlier age, but most of the time, you're locking in that amount for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. So you've got to guess, then, how long am I going to live?
Well, it's point two of that is not just yourself, but if the husband, let's just say, is the higher income earner, he then chooses to lock in a lower amount. Realize that amount is not just for his life. It now goes to his wife.
Oh, you know?
So the survivorship benefits are really where it compounds the problem, because now you have women in general tend to live a lot longer than us guys, right? So you're kind of shooting both of yourselves in the foot when you do that. And I'm not saying it's wrong to take it early. It does fit some people's needs. Yeah. But when you analyze your right decisions, you have to factor in what we're talking about now, which is your wife, is in my example, may live 10 more years past you and I, right?
Yeah, it's not uncommon at the age of 17.
She'll have three more husbands
you hear about people now, you know, 80, 85 is common. I mean,
My dad was 92, almost 93.
Right, yeah. So that's also the other thing, too, is look at your family history. I mean, if you have a genetic predisposition to actually be one of those people that lasts in their 90s, well, in their 90s, that's a big reality. I mean, that's 30 years.
A third
of your life, basically, still ahead of you, technically.
My wife's father made it till, I think, around 90. Her mother and dad both made it to around 90, and hers is her dad's sister made it to, just died at 104.
Wow.
Which used to be, like, mind-boggling, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
Now yet you hear that rarity is it's less rare, let's say, that you hear somebody over 100.
After my mom died.
With all their faculties, actually.
Right.
Yeah. Now, my mom died earlier. She died in her 70s. She got Parkinson's and everything else that we talked about and got to be kind of a mess. And so she died in her 70s. My dad lived 20 years without her and ended up having a couple of girlfriends, his last girlfriend for like 10 years. She just died at 100. My dad died 2 years ago. She just died at 100 last year.
Good for her.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So this is not as unusual as it was.
No, but let me just go back to a little bit to the Social Security thing, right? I mean, especially now with it being election year, right?
Yeah.
You hear about this all the time. I mean, it's constantly in the news, right? It's like, you know, Social Security, we're going to cut this, we're going to do that,
or raise the age,
or we're going to raise the age, or whatever, right? So other than the fact that when you might actually initiate it, right, there's all these other variables that are not really within your control. So how much of this is talk, and how much concern should people have with this?
Yeah. Is it going to run out? I hear more and more of my friends say, I can't rely on Social Security. By the time we get there in 20 years, it'll be gone. The fund will be bankrupt.
Yeah, and that is a question that I get all the time on our seminars, and it's a tough call. I mean, it's all hypotheticals, but as of right now, it is guaranteed until 2033. Mm-hmm. So what is going to happen next, I don't know. And as you mentioned, my guess will be that they will extend the full retirement age, which could be, right now it's about a 66 in a couple of months, up to 67. I wouldn't be surprised if it will go up to age 68 or 69 even. Mm-hmm. And also, I believe that you'll receive a reduced amount as far as the calculation of your Social Security benefit.
Mm. So again, even more reason why you should have a more comprehensive approach as far as your retirement planning.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
But right now, based on the life expectancy, they're saying that the best time to start collecting your Social Security benefit will be at age 67 in 4 months.
And what is
As opposed to waiting till 70, as opposed to...
Yes, absolutely. But again, there are so many different strategies that we help our clients with as far as understanding how to maximize your Social Security benefits, such as, again, spousal benefits or ex-spousal benefits.
You brought that up again. And my wife was divorced. She was married for 15 years. Another guy whose name we won't mention here, but by mutual
agreement. Wait, I'm just making notes for future therapy sessions.
Future therapy sessions. And went through an ugly divorce and everything else. We've been together since 1987. So what is that? We're going on 20, 30 years or something here. But she was married for 15 years. And somebody said to her that should this other gentleman die, she could still get some of his, because he never got married again. He never got remarried. That she could qualify for some of his Social Security. Is that true?
No. It's actually, in order to qualify for ex-spousal benefits, you either have, well, you can't be remarried, number one. You have to be at least age 62, and also you have your ex-spouse has to be entitled to collect his own benefit as well. So since you're remarried, she would not qualify for anything.
So if we hadn't been married, let's take that hypothetical out. Let's say she never remarried and he never remarried. And even though this is 30 years ago that they were married.
Sure.
Would somebody still qualify for that?
Absolutely. So if he would never have gotten married, then she will qualify for ex-spousal benefit and also for the survivorship benefit of the ex-spouse.
So what's the difference between those two? I'm still lost here.
Sure. Okay. The survivorship benefit is the surviving spouse gets to collect the highest amount of the two. So let's say you're collecting, and your wife is collecting as well.
Well, take me out of the picture. Let's just,
sure.
Just to make this math easier.
So sure.
You've got...
She's divorced. She didn't get remarried.
He didn't get remarried. So he dies, and then she has a choice between hers or his, depending on which is bigger?
Absolutely.
She doesn't get some of his. She just gets the greater of the two.
Yes, absolutely.
And if he's remarried, then that nullifies it?
Nope. She will still be entitled.
Okay.
So the spouse or the ex-spouse that wants to collect on the former spouse can't be remarried.
So here's a technical question, because I know a lot of people kind of like try to skirt this situation, right?
Uh-huh.
When does the state actually look at cohabitation as the equivalent of that, or does it not factor in?
As far as to collect on the spousal?
Uh-huh. Like let's say Paul and his wife basically shacked up for 30 years and didn't get married. Does she now basically still have the rights to collect on the exes?
No, she does not. And in order to collect on your spousal benefit, you have to be married for at least 1 year.
Okay, but I'm
no. But let's say that Paul and his wife, yeah. who was married, divorced, right?
And she just lives with.
They
somebody
never got married. Paul and his wife, Paul and his live-in, never got married. Right.
Sure.
So then, would the
we're hippies? What the heck?
Yeah, exactly. He's a baby boomer, right? Would his significant other or his live-in, basically his girlfriend at that point, after 30 years, whatever, would she still be entitled to basically pull on the ex?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I'm raising this point because I want to make sure people understand this, right?
Yeah.
Because we
jump to marriage.
I'm pointing at you as a baby boomer. You know, your generation is 50% divorced.
Yeah.
Right? And there's a lot of people that are under this impression that, you know, the minute that, you know, it's like, you know, spousal support and, you know, alimony and all these things factor in, then the person basically, oh, well, they have a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change it.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Okay. So, you know, again, things that you should be aware of, educate yourself relevant to that because it will impact.
So you're saying don't get married, just have fun.
Well, I see the glitter in your eyes. When you were going down this path about, well, can we tap into his social security?
So, all right.
You need better planning than that.
I'm still lost, though, onto the, let's say, that was survivorship. What's the other benefit? Again, let's say she's not married. They got divorced. 30 years went by. Neither one of them got remarried, and now they're both retired. Do they both get some of his retirement?
You keep on this line of questioning. You might find your stuff outside when you get home.
Right. But I'm fascinated because I know other people who would. I know lots of people who are in this age that. That went through divorce and just didn't get married again. You know,
those will be the only two benefits.
So what are the two benefits? I'm sorry.
It'll be the ex-spousal benefits, and then, if you want to call it, the ex-survivorship benefit.
And what is the ex-spousal benefit? That's what I don't understand.
The ex-spousal benefit, you can start collecting as early at age 62, and what you're entitled to is, at your full retirement age.
70.
Well, I'm assuming yours was probably 66 in a couple of months.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
At your full retirement age, you're entitled to 50%. Of what the amount of your ex-spousal or your ex-spouse's benefit is at his full retirement age.
Wow.
Can you give an example, Steve?
That's a good
idea. Sure. So let me tell you, okay, so let's say I'm 66 and my own benefit is...
Pick a round number, $2,000 or something.
$2,000.
Right.
Well, no, because they just changed some of the rules, so it's a little tricky here, which we can go over that in just a little bit. So let's just say that my own benefit is... $1,000 at my full retirement age.
Okay.
My ex-spouse's benefit at their full retirement age, let's say, just to keep the number simple, their amount is $3,000. Mm-hmm.
That's based on the different work histories of the two partners here.
Right? Sure. So I will be entitled to $1,500, which is 50% of my ex-spouse's benefit at their full retirement age. Which is a higher amount than my own benefit.
Right. Makes sense. Does that make sense? So you get it's a choice. It's one or the other. It's either your benefit or 50% of their benefit. Does that make sense? Assuming we're both full retirement age. Right?
Yep, absolutely. So before your full retirement age, you will receive a reduced amount.
So if one partner makes more than the other partner, they can't go back and there's no benefit. The one partner makes $3,000. And the other partner only is going to get $1,000. The $3,000 partner has
more appealing, and you get 50% of that, basically.
Yes, absolutely.
So let me ask you.
So it isn't $3,000 plus another.
It's not. It's the highest amount of the two.
I want to go back to the spousal benefits when we talk about veterans, maybe right after the break. But I have veterans benefits too, because there's a lot of military base in Orange County and
a lot.
So I want to just ask this. Okay, it's a lot of people that are working beyond 65. Right?
Absolutely.
Right. So,
why are you looking at me?
Huh? I think everybody in this room, to be fair, and I think Kevin started us off down that path when he was talking about why he is doing what he's doing and how he positioned the company, is I think we say that all the time, is that if you're lucky in life, you pursue something you're passionate about.
Absolutely.
Right? So I understand the working beyond a certain age, or not having age be a defining factor whether you're working or not in the traditional sense, right? And I you know a lot of people have encore careers, and a lot of people are going to pursue things that, you know, maybe in later life after retirement or close to retirement, that is more of a passion based than a basically what they feel is a job and bringing in the money and taking care of the household and stuff like that. And we see it all the time on the show, right? You're a perfect example of that, actually, right? I mean, you went and tried to be
started an encore career at late 50s here, yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right, doing this. So, and yet it's connected directly to what you did when you were in college and sort of a passion that you have for this.
Yeah.
So people are working beyond 65. So in many cases, it's passion, maybe. In some cases, it's the reality, especially after the recent downturn in the economy, mm-hmm. that, you know, your 401k, you need to, right? You can't afford not to be working, mm-hmm. right? Unfortunately, the society is more accepting of the fact that somebody is higher in age and basically working, although it does have ramifications on incoming work, you know, workforce and jobs opening and up and all that stuff, and, you know, larger macro kind of economics kind of impacts. But what, when it comes to this thing that we're talking about right now, okay, when you calculate your Social Security, Steve, right? If I'm working, let's say I don't retire until 75. Let's say sure. I find, you know, I'm working for myself, whatever, but I'm working, and I'm paying taxes and all this stuff. That calculation for your payment, right, what is it based on? Is it your whole life?
No.
Or is it the last 3 years? I'm asking this question specifically because most people don't realize
that's a good point.
That you have a control over this. You have an ability to manage this, even though it may be later in life.
Sure, absolutely. And it's quite simple. I mean, they calculate the highest 35 earning years that you've had throughout your career. And so, and
oh,
also,
oh, I thought it was, I would always been told that it was the last 5 years of your
no,
life.
No, it's, right? And you can see it on your Social Security statement. I believe it's on the third page, all the earnings you've had throughout your career.
Mm-hmm.
So they calculate again the highest 35 earning years that you've had. And also, just so you know, is even if you are, let's say, 66, you're collecting your own Social Security benefit and you're still working, those working years that you have will still give you a little increase on your Social Security benefit if that year on that year you had higher earnings that you've had 10 years ago.
So I think, say that again, Steve,
yeah.
in if I may, what you're saying is that you could be collecting Social Security and working and still increasing potentially your Social Security payment.
Absolutely, to where the income that you've had, that you would have for that year at age 66, 67, or 68 will still be calculated towards your Social Security benefit.
So that's fascinating because you're saying that you're taking you're getting a benefit from Social Security, and yet you're still working and generating income. Is there any
limits
to that?
As far as the calculation, yes. I mean, you can't earn, or you can only contribute about, what is it, a total of 6.4% a year towards your own Social Security benefit. But you're capped or you're maxed up till $118,000 for the year.
So right. Now I'm lost. You got me totally lost.
So you could be generating up to $118,000 a year in income?
Correct.
Yes.
And that would still qualify you to be drawing on your Social Security?
That will still be calculated towards your Social Security benefit.
Okay. What happens after 118?
Then you can – that's the cap as far as the earnings that you can have – to contribute towards your Social Security benefits.
Okay, let me ask the question very, very, very directly. Is there any point, if you are continuing to work after you are drawing on Social Security and generating income, is there any point by which you basically then fall into not being able to draw on Social Security?
You make too much to draw on Social Security.
Well, I'm pointing that out because people sometimes reinvent themselves and actually have a more successful career later on in life. After retirement.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of an encouraging people to engage in that and not shy away from maybe pursuing a passion that could become an income source.
I thought that I fell into that trap. I thought that when you retire, you have to make less money. If I'm going to start taking Social Security,
that's why I'm asking
the
question.
Limit to on how much I can earn while drawing Social Security.
And that point comes in if you collect before your full retirement age.
Ah.
That's why I used the example of at your full retirement age. So,
and full retirement age is not when you receive the maximum benefit.
No, that is
the 66 in a few months that you're talking about.
Well, at age 66, that's when you're entitled to 100% of your Social Security benefit.
So before, no matter how much you make from that point on, you get 100%.
That is correct. So before your full retirement age, so just to keep it simple and not get too technical here, from the age of 62 till your full retirement age, if you earn more than $15,780 a year of income and you're collecting your Social Security benefit, every $2 that you earn from your wages, a dollar will be reduced from your Social Security benefit.
I see. But after 66, which is what it currently is
now, it does
not
apply anymore.
I can make $1 million and I still get retirement.
I'm guessing, I'm just going to make an assumption that over time that's going to change. Because what's happening is I think we're finding ourselves in that little sort of unregulated spot where the system hasn't caught up with the fact that people are working longer.
And living longer.
And living longer. And so you still have the benefit of basically starting to collect at a certain point, but you still have 10, 15, 20 years of work life in you still, especially if you tap into something, right, that mm-hmm. maybe is generating more than when you were employed by somebody, but you're self-employed now, maybe you're making more, right? So I wanted to just bring that up because I think it's an interesting point. Most people probably, like you, Paul, believe that don't have it right.
No.
Don't
I
have
thought it clear. Once you
Thank
start,
you, Steve,
there's
clarity.
A
yeah,
limit
no
on how much you can make every year for the rest of your life. And you're saying once you're fully vested at 66 and start collecting it, if you waited till 70, you might collect a little more. They give you a little bonus if you wait till 70. But if you started at 66, there is no limit on how much you can earn from that point forward.
Yeah, and I kind of want to kind of rephrase that just a little bit, Paul. It's not necessarily age 66. I mean, I'm just using that number because it's roughly an easy number to keep for this conversation. But your full retirement age will be based on when you were born.
Okay.
And you can also see that on your Social Security statement, or you can go online and see when your full retirement age is going to be. If we just want to use the word full retirement age, I think it will be easier and less confusing.
Well, let's do this because, I mean, the resources are available. Let's go to the break, Paul. When we come back, Steve, I want you to give the link to those things, like where people can find that information for themselves. And then I want to talk about veterans and veterans benefits.
All that and more when we come right back. This is fascinating. Stick around.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
We're back.
Okay, so again, you know, knowledge is power, right? And we're talking to Kevin Richards and Steve Herman here about, you know, and Kevin, you're a registered financial consultant, right?
Correct.
And Steve, you're a retirement planner.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So again, you know, consulting and planning. I know some people are like, you know, I don't plan and I consult. You know, I don't do these things.
Right. Just let it happen, man.
You can't live
for the moment. Live for today, baby.
Those last words
right,
brought to you by the hippie section of the radio station.
That's
peace, man.
Peace.
All right. So, but I just, I think, and I'm not a planner. Okay, I'll admit it. I'm one of those guys. I'm in a creative field. I'm a commercial interior designer. I don't think linearly. You know, granted, I have an undergraduate in economics. God knows what happened in my brain there. Right. But there is a. At some point in your life, you have to accept the fact that if you do not do a certain percentage of planning, you're basically just floundering. You're at the whim of everything that happens to you, and you don't even have some kind of ruddered future.
So why, then, is that the reality? You asked him, and I can tell you from my own anecdotal
evidence. What reality?
None of us are ready. The baby boom are rushing into this headlong. Are we in denial? We just don't think we're that old. We don't want to face it. We don't want to think about it. What is it, this hippie mentality that we grew up with, the live for today, I might die tomorrow?
Your careless, carefree attitude is making us, you know, Gen Xers basically really plan, okay?
My wife is part of this.
You're changing my behavior.
She talks about this the same way. We rarely can talk about it. She says, I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to. And I don't know whether she doesn't want to face how old she is, or she just doesn't want to think about it, or
maybe
somehow it'll all work out.
Remember, we were just talking about how people maybe feel like they are the, I mean, and I think it's common human behavior, right? Not necessarily on a financial or retirement planning side. I think most people sometimes feel like they're the only one going through something.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're the only one who didn't plan. They're the only one who didn't prepare.
Right.
They're the only one that didn't book for that vacation until the last minute kind of thing. And yet, you know, and that's why I asked the question the way I asked it to Kevin, right? It is not the case.
No, the majority
of
us are
not. There are a lot of people. The majority of people are not there. So don't, you know, I'm sorry to take away from your own personal sense of uniqueness by being the only person who hasn't planned for retirement, but that's not the case. And that should give you some empowerment to feel like you actually have some ability to control your destiny, to put some steps in place.
I don't have any of this stuff thought out here. My father was a super planner. We had somebody in.
So were you rebelling against your father's planning?
I think part of that's true. I think we just felt like.
See, gentlemen, I told you this is a therapy session for Paul. Right? This is not a radio show.
I don't think I'm alone. I think of the majority. I'm going through my mentally. I have a group of friends that I've known since junior high. The vast majority of them are not going to get any sort of retirement plan. They have very little saved. The equity in their house is probably the only money.
So start compiling that list of contacts, because I think Kevin, I'm looking at him across the table, is chomping at the bits to tell you exactly why you should be planning.
But there's something
I think we just found you more
none
clients.
None of us seem to really want to get into it and talk about it too much. Maybe it's because we think it's too late, or we didn't save enough, or we're just kind of screwed, or whatever. I don't talk about
that. The sky is falling, and I have nothing. I can't do anything about it. And the truth is, no, that's not the case. We just found out that you could be drawing on Social Security as long as you don't, before the break, as long as you don't draw too early or before your age, right, that you qualify. If you can do that, you can still benefit from Social Security and still be working and making an income with a cap of $118,000, did you say, Steve?
No, that's there's no cap after you're
fully vested. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Right. I mean, you can be making 100 grand plus and still be drawing on Social Security if you actually plan to do that.
After your full retirement age.
I just got to clarify again, because I heard something and I think I misunderstood it. So after your full retirement age, which we'll say in my case probably around 66, because I'm in the smack middle of that curve.
Well, I'll tell you what. Rather than guess, I promise Steve, where do people find out this information? What is retirement age for them? Because you were saying before the break that it depends on when you were born.
It's a secret.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something we can help you with, but you can also look on your Social Security statement, will be stated on there.
Okay.
Which those statements can be mailed to you, I believe, or you can go ahead and find them on the SSA.gov.
I think they start mailing them to you at a certain point, like at a certain age you start getting them in the mail?
Yes, they do, and they did.
50, I think, or 55?
51, I'm not quite sure exactly what age, but they stopped for a while, but now I'm seeing it more and more to where our clients come in with their Social Security statements.
They've been mailed. I think they send them to you at a certain age.
So let's assume again that 66, just for the sake of argument, in my case, or in my age group's case.
Yeah.
If I want to increase that Social Security payment, talk about that again. There's some way I can make up to $118,000 and can actually increase it in the last few years of my life here.
Sure. I mean, that was a little technical. So each year, like right now, even you remember those 35 earning years to calculate your Social Security benefit, you are contributing 6.4% of your total wages for the year towards your Social Security benefit.
Okay.
But you're capped at $118,000 as far as the contributions you can make towards your Social Security benefits of the 6.4%.
6% only comes off of the first $118,000 I make here.
Sure. Absolutely.
That extra million doesn't count. All right.
Nope.
All right.
It does not count.
So don't work that hard.
Doesn't work.
Yeah,
okay.
So like you were saying, I mean, after your full retirement age, if you're working and collecting your Social Security benefits, you can still make a contribution.
Right. And so Kevin, again, how important is this planning?
It's crucial. I mean, when you think about life, I mean, none of us want to go to the dentist. None of us want to go to the doctors, really, unless you're sick. But if you don't go to the dentist for even cleanings, right, you're shooting yourself in the foot in probable major issues down the road. Same thing in financial planning. It's something that we all don't want to do. I'd rather go play golf or, you know, go travel.
Be on the radio. You'd rather be on the radio.
I'd love to be on the radio with you guys instead of sitting there looking at numbers all day.
Just being nice.
But I tell you, it's the most critical thing we all need to do outside of our own health. Without your own health, well, there's nothing else beyond that. But besides, as long as you have good health, if you don't have financial resources to live your life the way you want to live it, well, you're right there just causing
so, I would argue that it's actually probably even more important because this day and age, with the cost of health cost being
factor,
what it is, your financial health is actually critical to whether you can sustain
yourself. So I only have one question. Why aren't we doing it? You started the show by saying we're not prepared. Yeah. They don't have much saved. They don't have 50% of them have no plan.
Is it a concern about what it costs to do the planning?
You know, that's a good point. I haven't really nailed down to an exact one or two reasons why. I have theories of my own self in terms of the generation of baby boomers and how they were brought up from a very independent freedom, do what you want to do kind of a lifestyle in the 60s to not thinking about the future. You all were not in that mindset as much as the great generation was before us.
My dad started planning from the minute he started saving the minute he started working.
Right.
We started spending the minute I started working.
There's your point. So it's more of a cultural thing that's kind of pervading the whole country, I think, as a generality there. But, and again, it's not fun. It's not something that brings us excitement to go plan for how you're going to pay for your future long-term care costs or how you're going to pay for your living arrangements when you're not working.
How do you pay for your services? Is it just a fee and you do it one time and I never see you again? Or is it like we have another show, the guy's a registered investment advisor. He only works with people that have millions of dollars and he takes a certain percentage of their pool of money.
How do you pay a chart for your services?
Great question. So we don't have minimums, first of all. So we're here to help from all levels of our demographic. So whether you have $50,000 to plan with or $1 million, we're still going to do the same work, same research, in guiding you through all your options, through Social Security options, veterans benefit options, and just really how to protect your own life savings and grow it above inflation. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to grow all of our clients' assets above the inflation numbers and not losing principal, because you can't rebound when you're 65 and the stock market pulls out 40% of your dang life savings. Yeah. You don't have 30 years like I do, hope I do, to get that back.
Exactly.
So you really need to have that mindset. And back to your point of how we get paid, we're fiduciaries. I am to the point where we get paid on a percentage of what we're managing.
Is that like
for the
being
clients.
A Shriner or something, a fiduciary?
Well, yeah. It's
there's no fez in play.
It's got a lot of definite. Yeah. No, but the definition.
Secret handshakes and stuff.
Well, Steve and I do, but it's not.
Stuff you learn on the show.
But that's a whole different
that's
conversation. That's a different show, actually.
That's a different time of night. And, not
get
a good
the whiskey
time
out.
Show.
The right, show
I see it over there now. I forgot the point now.
So how do you get paid?
So
you said you were fiduciaries.
So right, in simple terms, without getting too complicated, we're on the same side of the fence as the client. So what we're doing is we're managing our client's assets, and in general terms, it's about a 1% fee. So, but that means we're aligned. We're not here to churn or buy and sell and earn commissions to the point where you're not any better off than you were before all of our commission fees, right?
Right.
So if you and I are on the same side of the fence and our account is growing, I'm happy because our 1% is worth more. Mm-hmm. You're happier too because your total value is higher, right?
Right. So, and do you get commit? Let's say you recommend you buy a stock. Are you getting a commission off of the sale of that stock too?
No, we don't. Not at all. That's why I'm not geared or I'm not incentivized towards choosing something that's going to pay me more, because that's not a fiduciary. Fiduciary is your teammate.
Well, Kevin, you did say that there's no minimum, but I want to make sure that you're not getting a lot of calls from people.
$50.
Set the standard. Yeah.
Well, in general things, so let's just say if you have $100 to your name, of course, you're not going to even want to call us. But if a person has enough savings in their checking account to let them have 6 months worth of reserves, above that number, let's just call it $25,000. Everybody in this room and in this county should have at least $25,000 sitting there in your checking account for the emergencies, right? If you're above that number, then there's needs to not just let your money sit there in a checking account earning you very little interest, if any.
Yeah.
You need to put it to
work. Especially these days.
And put it to work smartly. That's where we come in. We have the resources out there, carte blanche, to do what is right for the client. I don't work for one wirehouse or company that has only a box that has X, Y, and Z in there to give to clients. We're not that.
Can I share my ugly experience again here, since this is all about me here, this show here?
By all means.
Several years ago, I went to Merrill Lynch. Sorry, I'm going to name them by name here. And later went to Smith Barney. I tried both of the big houses here, and I had like $50,000.
Yeah.
And I gave it to them, and I said, you manage it, you run with it, and everything else. And they said, oh, well, we got the stocks for you. Enron, this is a great stock.
Yeah.
WorldCom, blah, blah. I can rattle off a whole bunch of them. They turned that 50 into like 20 real fast.
Yeah.
And all they were doing is turn, and I found that they were recommending stuff. I thought, I'm going to go with the big house. They got all the big inside knowledge. They know what to pick. No, they were putting me into stocks that they got compensated for.
Right.
They got not only a commission by selling it, but an incentive for selling me that stock. Yeah. And I was so incensed and so angry, and it really ruined that chunk of money.
So we're going to run out of time, and I want you guys back to talk about veterans. Okay?
Yes.
So we're going to set up a time to do that. And we've said before, we're going to take 1 hour of the month and actually do a veterans hour.
The phone's ringing. They're trying to get
so we're going
to
do that. Somebody's calling. But to your point, Kevin, you were telling me about Department of Labor. Ruled for financial advisors and why it was important and necessary. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, that's in a show in itself, to be honest. But in simple terms, it's regulatory guidelines that are coming out to make it where we all, as a financial planning industry, are kind of held to the same standards of fiduciaries, so that we don't have your story, Paul, repeating itself throughout the country. You need to be working with a person who is an independent fiduciary that does not have an ulterior motive, like your example.
To move stocks, basically.
Or to get commissions. If you're getting paid a commission, I am, let's just say, you don't know, am I working for your best interest or my pocket's best interest, right? So fiduciaries do not have that option. If you're a fiduciary, you cannot be doing that unless you disclose and the client agrees and how you get compensated. But we have to be fully transparent. And that's what I think the problem has been for years. There has been very limited transparency in terms of the fees you're paying and your 401ks, your IRAs, whatever you may have. It's been very convoluted. That's going away rapidly. So we already do that ourselves. We have to do that as fiduciaries. So we're already ahead of the game. I'm not worried about the new rules, really.
Right.
Some guys.
Yeah, you're already subject to them anyway.
I'm already exactly right, subject to them. So those that are not are going to have kind of rude awakenings coming up soon. So, you know, again, we're trying to be a full service planning firm. We're not just looking at your stocks and your mutual funds and your bonds. We're trying to plan a person's entire life out so they know that a question of a doubt that they are fully secured and living the lifestyle they want to live for the remaining years that are with us.
And I'm going to rattle these up. And you list financial services, investment management, tax strategies, Social Security planning, veterans benefit. Like I said, we want to talk about that when you guys come back on the show. Federal employee benefits. So to your point, you are a more holistic everything approach, and it's really the plan for the benefit of that client.
Absolutely.
And your compensation is tied directly with how well the management
of those
assets.
So if they lose, you lose.
You got it.
Right.
Exactly right. You got to really be thinking as if these clients were your own parents. And my parents are, you know, baby boomers as well. So
why are you guys looking at me again here?
Yeah. But they're my case study, honestly, and that's what got me really motivated and seeing what they went through and didn't plan themselves and got you know, different taking advantage of incidences like
this. I got
screwed. Yeah, and it's not fair out there. So you really got to have the heart to be able to communicate this to clients, know that we're here to help these guys do what's best for them. Of course, I want to make a living. Of course, I need to pay the bills.
Sure.
But I'm also here not short term. I got a 5-year-old daughter. I'm not going anywhere.
See,
for
and,
a lot
and
of years.
That is so important for me. When I hear that, when I look at somebody's approach and look at it as being, this is not a short-term return. This is not a quarterly results approach. This is not mm-hmm. what the commission numbers are going to be at the end of the month. Okay, when it is
or what I'm incentivized to sell this
vested,
month, we got to move this stuff.
Right, vested right. in a long-term, not only my well-being, but themselves, that is something that I can work with. That is
right.
somebody I can work with.
Right.
So, you know, I know you guys have a couple upcoming events. I mean, it's going to read them off here on your website. You got a June 7th. Tell me if these are still effect. Strategies to maximize your Social Security income, June 7th at 6:30, San Juan Capistrano Community Center.
Correct.
And then on the 11th, strategies to maximize your Social Security income again, and it will be at the same place, correct, at 6:30?
That's right.
Okay. So both on the 7th and on the 9th of June this month, there's opportunities there to address Social Security questions even more than we've touched on today, and I'm sure there's a lot more.
And I'd love to hear about 401ks. How do you? So many people think they have no control over their 401k. It just goes in and it sits there, and you hope and pray. But I think you do have some choices. And how do you manage? That's a whole other discussion. My wife's always saying, "Why only got these four to choose from? Where's that's what else?"
So if people like Paul or others who are looking to reach you guys for some direction or to get hold of you, how do they find you?
Well, there's two options. The first is our website. That's www.knrconsultinggroup.com. Or, of course, they can call us at our office number, which is 949-218-3900. And that's out of our Laguna Niguel office.
Awesome. You're just down the street, actually, from
yeah.
me. Yep. So, and, Steve, thank you very much.
Yeah,
do you want to add anything to that?
No.
That you can think of?
No, I think for now we covered everything that we wanted to cover for today.
I feel so stupid.
Well, but you know what? That's the, what did they used to say with G.I. Joe? Learn, knowing is half the power or something like that. Like
They said
know?
That with G.I. Joe?
Yeah. Did you ever watch G.I.
Joe?
No. Great American Hero?
Never mind. Yeah, okay. I understand it.
Oh, God. I can't believe I opted myself like that.
That's all right.
But I appreciate you guys coming really and demystifying some of this stuff. And I know we've just kind of scratched the surface here. Steve, thank you so much. You were concerned about the fact that it was technical. I think, like I said to you during the break, there's no way for this not to be technical.
Right.
That shouldn't scare people. I know it instinctively may at the beginning, but you have a couple of gentlemen here in the room and, you know, their company that is there to help you through that path. You don't have to go this alone. You don't have to worry about it to the point where it paralyzes you. You can always pick up the phone and do that. If you have any questions, you know, call the gentleman at the information. Again, it's knrconsultinggroup.com. And thank you again, guys. And if you want to reach us, it's you can reach me on via email, rad@gmail.com, or look us up on Facebook at The Rad Life. We will see you again next Wednesday.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You have been listening to The Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.